Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by KidLitCon, an annual conference celebrating and connecting the people who work in KidLit. From bloggers and podcasters to writers and librarians, anyone with a passion for KidLit and an excitement to talk about it will find good company here. I'm attending this year's KidLitCon, which will be held Friday, October 9th and Saturday, October 10th at the Hyatt Place Harbor East in Baltimore, and I invite you to join me. Early bird registration has been extended until September 20th, but be sure to register soon, as spots are filling up fast. Visit kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon for more details. That's kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon. See you there! Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. Hey, I wanted to let you know about a new podcast I started entirely devoted to book reviews. It's called The Best Book Ever This Week, and you can find it all on your favorite podcast host sites, including iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe today to The Best Book Ever This Week and never miss an episode. Speaking of which, this episode is number 184 of the Let's Get Busy podcast with Dawn Tate, author, illustrator of Poet, The Remarkable Story of George Moses Horton, which is published by Peachtree. I had dinner with Dawn and some other KidLit notables last April when I was invited to attend TLA. It was the first time I had ever met Dawn, but certainly not the first time I had ever seen his work. Dawn's art has been all over my reading life for the past several years, and so you can imagine what a privilege it was for me to sit down and chat with him over the release of his debut picture book as both the author and illustrator. Poet is a remarkable story about a remarkable man, but I think you'll agree that the man behind this book is no less remarkable as well. Here is episode number 184 of the podcast with Dawn Tate. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Dawn Tate. I am so excited that the road has brought me back to talking to you today.
I am really excited to be here, Matthew. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, thank you for just how kind and amazing of a person you were when I met you back at TLA. I'm so glad that sort of life brought us to the same dinner table, as it were. Or maybe Chris brought us to the same dinner table, Chris Barton. But I really admire the art that you create and the way that you tell stories through your art, and you just do beautiful work. And so to be able to have you on tonight, and no less to talk about Poet, is such a wonderful treat for me. So again, thank you for coming on.
Well, you know, I appreciate teachers and librarians like you, because you know, during the daytime, you're putting good books in the kids' hands. And then in the evening, you go home and you cook dinner and put the kids to bed. And then you further, you're putting authors' books, talking up and chatting up authors' books. And so you make the KidLit community a much better place. So thank you.
Well, there's a lot of good people in our KidLit community that just have that bug, don't we? That it's like reading to children all day long isn't enough. And then coming home and reading to your children before bed still isn't enough. That we need to get online and we need to get other places and just keep talking about these books because, well, I guess it's the connection, isn't it? Like what you have experienced in school visits and conference visits, it's really cool to be able to connect with people over a shared love and admiration for a book or the person behind the book. That's a really fun thing.
Definitely. And, you know, I think about, you know, librarians like John Hsu, who's been, I got to give a shout out to John Hsu. He's been talking my book over the last week. And you know what? Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, as publishers, they want us authors to get out there and really promote our books. But, you know, oftentimes it's hard. So I appreciate folks like you who make our jobs easier.
Well, yeah, I mean, this has come up on the podcast before, but it's one of those great mutual admiration society type situations where you make these great books and it's our pleasure to talk about them and help give, I mean, that's our job to get these books into kids' hands, but we need good books in order to accomplish that. So John's one of the best. I think my friend Brian Wan actually might've been the one credited to calling him the Johnny Appleseed of children's literature. He certainly is.
Oh,
if you know John Hsu, and how great that he's not to make this the John Hsu podcast, but that John recently mentioned that he is Scholastic's the ambassador for school librarians or something. It's amazing. I think all of us in this great kidlit world couldn't have picked a better person. So Scholastic did the right thing, and to see how he'll be able to serve readers and librarians further and books further is going to be great. And like you said, he's been talking, as I think a lot of us on social media now have been talking up Poet, your new book, The Remarkable Story of George Moses Horton. A beautiful book, Don.
Thank you so much. Very excited. My first authored and illustrated book, so I'm very excited about it.
Yes, it is. And what a debut. This is the way to come out swinging, man. It's wonderful.
It's been exciting. It's been exciting times. We got 3 more weeks before that launch date, so I just kind of, you know, sit back and take it in.
This is sort of that quiet time, isn't it? Well, I guess when people listen to this, it will be coming out. But what is, I mean, you've illustrated books before, so you're used to launch dates, but this is your own. Has it felt different to prepare for your own launch?
It's always kind of nerve-wracking. It's always kind of nerve-wracking because, you know, a lot of people say, well, I never read my reviews, but I read each and every review. And so you read it and you're kind of holding your breath, and then you wait for that, you know, and a lot of times they'll say really nice things, and then they'll get to that but, and then you kind of hold your breath. But with this book, it's been nothing but really positive comments, and so really it's, you know, it's all been good.
Good. Well, it's you know that everyone pours so much love into their book. Those reviews can be a hard thing. Hopefully people that review remember that there are people behind them as they are reviewing these books. But this one, I've seen it coming in with starred reviews. This is an easy book to love, and one that I appreciate not only for how well it reads aloud, but one that immediately has a place in the classroom. I always like, as a teacher, I always like when a book can live both those dual lives of being a great read aloud, but also helping to connect children with a topic or an individual that in a subject area that they may or may not be interested in before. These are sort of those through lines that kids end up talking about. Oh, there was that one activity we did, or that one book that you read, that's when it just stuck for me. Yeah. And this is one of those books that is going to stick for people. It will. And that's a great thing. But Don, before I progress further with telling you how much I admire this book and admire you for making it, do you mind giving a book talk, just a brief summary of what the story of Remarkable George Moses Horton, Poet, what this book is all about?
So Poet is the story of George Moses Horton, who became the first African-American to become published in the South. And he published at a time when, you know, it was against the law to teach an African-American how to read. But his mother, she recognized his ambition, and so she gave him the one valuable thing that she had, which was a Wesley hymnal. And he found an old spelling book, and he taught himself how to read. And he loved poetry, and so he began to compose poetry inside of his head as he worked. And then later on, when he was 17 years old, he was sold away or given away to his master's brother, and he would walk to the village of Chapel Hill and recite his poetry, and became known as the Black Bard of Chapel Hill.
Yes.
Long story short, but he went on to become the first African American to get published in the South.
Right. And it's the poetry flowing from George's head, literally in your illustration, literally flowing from his head, is something that it's evocative of song and of rhythm. And it's beautiful. And to know this story, I mean, where did you, is this a story you've sort of had in your back pocket? Have you known about George for a while, or did you come across him in, I don't know, researching a different book?
Yeah, you know what? I wish that I had this great story to tell, this great backstory. But actually, Chris Barton, who's a writer buddy of mine, we were critique buddies, and we would get together, you know, on Saturdays and read each other's manuscripts and offer critique. And after one of our meetings, he said, "Don, you should write the story of George Moses Horton." And so, okay. So I went home that afternoon and did my research, and I became so intrigued with the story, I started researching that afternoon. But you know what? That's really how both of my books, It Just Happened and Poet, I was inspired by writer friends. Diana Aston, the author of An Egg is Lively, said, "Don, you should write a story about Bill Traylor." And I did that. And so I really am thankful to my great author friends.
I love that these author friends of yours sort of know you well enough and know your skill, and also I can't just be your illustrative skill, but also just they know you in the way of knowing what stories come to life in your inspiration to tell them, that they would recommend these to you, and then you just did it.
Yeah,
and Chris would just say, "You should do this," and then you did, and it was fantastic.
And Diana even said, you know, when she said that, I wanted to tell her, "No, Diana, you write the story and I'll illustrate it." But before I could even say that, she said, "This is your story to tell." And that gave me, you know, the confidence that my friends believed in me to be able to sit down and write the story. So I have great friends.
Clearly, you're not moving away from that critique group anytime soon.
Not anytime soon.
Well, it is a lovely book, and I love. I mean, it was similar to what I've seen in your illustrations for Amazing Age of John Roy Lynch, which you had done with Chris, which I loved talking to him on the podcast to find out that I didn't even connect that you. That you both were at that point, you both were in the same critique group, but also, you know, from the same state, you're from the everything that all of this came together. And it was just like, oh, and you ended up being the two people on this book together. That just felt like something that's not the way it's supposed to work. This is amazing that it worked that way.
Yeah. And even more cool, the book that I was telling you that I finished today.
Yes.
Is a Chris Barton book.
You're doing another Chris Barton book.
Another Chris Barton book. And that book is called Whoosh. And it's the story of the inventor, African-American inventor, Lonnie Johnson, who invented the Super Soaker squirt gun.
No, Lonnie, I'm writing this down. Lonnie Johnson, Super Soaker. That's you're making a story about a Super Soaker. That's got to be the greatest thing to illustrate, just water pumping action going everywhere.
That's going to be a lot of fun. And you can just imagine what our launch party is going to be like. We're going to have to have super soakers. So
see, there you go. I was talking to recently, I was interviewing Eric White, who's an illustrator. He does the Frankie Pickle books too. And he's illustrating this book, or he has illustrated a book coming out with Kelly DiPuccio called Everyone Loves Bacon. And so I was like,
wow,
you are a genius, man. You worked on a book where all your author visits are going to have bacon in them.
Oh, man, I got to have that book now.
But then, Don, but then you come on and drop that, oh, you've got bacon, which is great. We have super soakers. I think you two need to have, like, dual launch parties or whatever. They're coming apart at different times. But all of you need to do some sort of an awesome author tour where, like, okay, Eric's got the book with bacon. Eric and Kelly have a book about bacon. You and Chris have a book about super soakers. Let's get all of these sort of people with these cool book concepts in them to have, like, the greatest author visits ever, where you've got, like, super soaker party with bacon and name other stuff. I don't know. You can get Megan McCarthy to come. You can get The History of Bubblegum. That pop book is like one of my favorite nonfiction books.
I'm a big fan of Megan McCarthy's as well.
There you go.
Of her books.
We can pull all these people together. It'll be amazing. Well, you were mentioning to me off recording that Whoosh, you did, that's your first book that you've done in all digital art, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, I've been illustrating digitally for many years. I've used my illustrations digitally for like educational books and for newspapers, but this is my first trade book.
Okay.
Where I've illustrated digitally, yes.
So how was the art made for Poet then?
It's created with acrylic watercolors, which is like a watercolor paint, but the difference is that you can layer one color over the other without disturbing the paint underneath. And so I went in with brown lines and then did the acrylic wash over top.
The result is really nice. I mean, you're in that way that it looks like watercolor. Just not being an artist, I thought, did you have to wait like hours and hours before moving on to another color?
Oh,
that
no.
It'd be acrylic, dreadful.
Acrylic dries immediately. And then I used Photoshop to drop the lettering in. So the idea is that I wanted to include some of George's voice in the story without including it in the narrative.
Oh, yeah.
So I dropped his poetry over the art in Photoshop.
Nice. Well, I gotta say, I love the way you draw people's faces.
Oh, well, I appreciate that because kids often ask me, why do you make the character's head so big? And you know what? It's one of those things that I really never thought about. I guess that's just how I see the world. People love the world with big-headed people or something. I don't know. But that often shows up in, like, the reviews, Don Tate's signature big-headed people. But I don't know. That's just kind of how I draw, I guess. So
I see the world with big-headed people. Have you ever gotten a review where someone mentioned big-headed people?
Oh, yeah. I get that quite a bit. Yeah. They don't use the word big-headed. They say Dante's oversized heads, that sort of thing.
Oh, my.
And when I first showed up, I thought, so was that, do you like my oversized heads? Or is that a positive critique or a negative thing? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I will say, personally, I love your style. I've said that already. But what I like about, especially when you're doing nonfiction, about having a focus on the face like that, and also because you draw faces so well, is that it brings the character to life and the emotion to life and allows you to convey, you know, much of the story wordlessly just by allowing us to study the face. And in a nonfiction book, nonfiction picture books, I feel like, tend to have, you know, higher word counts than
yes.
than others, which is totally fine. But when you have that, especially as a librarian, I'm thinking as I'm reading aloud those books, it becomes important, not that you need to trim down words, but rather that the art then needs to be able to hold their attention longer. It's going to take me longer to read this page, which is fine, but we need to be able to keep the children engaged in the words, but also that the words are going into their brains while they're absorbing this picture. And so I feel like you've got a great balance of being able to do that, there are times when you just have, well, in this book too, there's times when you have George just right up front. We are staring just at him. He's taking up the entire page. So we can see that emotion. We can see, I've turned to the page where his poems were being printed in the Gazette. So he's like hugging the Gazette with his eyes closed, just looking up. Right. And sort of basked in yellow light. The rest of the page that you have is just this beautiful, like wavy yellow.
Yeah.
But being able to just look at that image while the words can sink in, that's right. Something that I know that you must be conscious of it while you're doing it. But that's I think, Don, is what sets you apart from other illustrators and what makes your nonfiction work so well, because you are able to engage us in the details of your art while the words can also do their job.
Well, thank you. I do try to zero in on the faces and the emotion intentionally, because my books tend to be, they tend to deal with some pretty serious subject matter. You know, with Poet, we're dealing with the topic of slavery. With John Roy Lynch, we're dealing with the topic of Reconstruction. A book written by Kelly Starling Lyons called Hope's Gift, and another book on the topic of slavery and a runaway slave. So, you know, they're history books. And so sometimes kids, you know, they're not going to want to pick up the history book. They're going to want to pick up the dancing you know, duck book or whatever. But I like to use illustrations, you know, somewhat whimsical illustrations to really engage my reader and to get them into the story. And then they get a history lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the challenge of drawing a kid into a book. That's something that I think can never be overstated, that it's as much as it's important for your cover to read well, to make them want to, well, let's be honest. Let me go all the way back to being a librarian and say, your cover needs to read well so that we will make it face out on our shelves.
Right.
You know, at the end of the shelf, you have room for a book or two to face out. And often, if we have media helpers helping us to put books out, or if we have assistants doing it, volunteers doing it, or if we are the ones doing it, you look for the books, not just that have great subject matter, but have engaging covers.
Right.
And there are times, sadly, when a cover can fall short. And I know that part of that is you working with just, you know, your aesthetic makes it work. Or I know that there are like art directors, right? That there are teams of people, right. I'm now aware, that help to do that. But when you're talking about doing these you know, great works of biography, that cover has to read really, really well. And you know, looking at Poet, you've got this picture of this young man hugging a newspaper out in the middle of a field with cows in the background and sort of the sun rising. And I feel like there's so much going on in that cover art that we could step back after reading the story and even we could talk about, why do you think Mr. Tate chose to illustrate it this way? You know, because you've just got things working in there that end up informing a lot of what the story is about. So I think you're sort of the real deal, Don. I think you know what you're doing, and you pull it off too.
Well, one of the things with my covers you'll notice, and the kids often notice too, is that the covers are somewhat similar. They all feature the characters very prominently, and I feature brown-faced people, and I think that's important because there's, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of books that featured brown-faced characters, and so when that book is sitting on the shelf, I want the child to be able to see it across the library that, hey, there's a book across the library with a character that looks like me, and I want them to see that character. So that could account for maybe the large head of people, but that is something that's similar on all of my books, that the characters are featured in a positive, dignified manner and very prominently.
Yes, I love that notion of wanting to see yourself in the book. Because of not only knowing that, I don't know, not only knowing the figure, knowing the person, knowing the importance that anyone in one of your books, the importance that they had in history, but because of what you said, even when we read history books, we see ourselves in that character. We see ourselves in their struggle, in their accomplishments. We inevitably, no matter what background you come from, you become the character when you are reading a book like that. So it's important, yeah, that you can physically, you know, that you can physically see the person on the cover, not just. I mean, if I take George off of the cover, then there's just this idea of someone being a poet, but that's not what needs to read in this. The picture needs to read really well. Yeah.
Needs to read really well. And it needs to be something that a child, like you say, a child can look at and say, hey, at that, I can picture myself as that character. And sometimes I think about books like, what was it? I'm completely losing my memory here. The book about the kid and the pancakes and the tigers and, you know, the old one.
Yeah, the
little Black Sambo.
Little Sambo, okay. Sambo's
little,
Lord,
little
yeah.
Black Sambo. Okay, so you have this character is a person of color that's not representative of an attractive. The character doesn't present an attractive person of color. You know, it's a derogatory image. A child cannot pick up a book like that and identify with it. So it's very important when I create a book that I know that a child can look at that and see themselves and feel good about the character and feel good about themselves.
Yeah. There's another thing that happened with this book, just to turn the conversation a little bit. I hope you don't mind. But another thing that happened just with me last week with the book is that when I got another copy of the fold and gathered copy of the arc of the review copy, and Peachtree is sending out quill pens.
Peachtree is like one of the most wonderful publishers. They've done such a fantastic job of producing the book and promoting the book and getting me out there on the road in front of teachers and librarians.
They're really championing your book. That's amazing.
Yes, yes. And that doesn't always happen. I don't want to alienate my other publishers, but typically, you know, they publish a book and that's pretty much it.
Well, let me tell you what that...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let me tell you what that did for me. And this is something that it makes me feel like other publishers should take note of the way Peachtree approached this, which is not to say that there's one right way or wrong way to do it or whatever. You know, marketing campaigns are what they are. People behind them trying to get you to connect with the book. And that's all great. All efforts are amazing. Everything you do to try to get a book into somebody's hands and make them feel a connection is great. But for Peachtree to send out ink and a quill, a feather quill pen to reviewers. What it did for me being a teacher immediately was, oh, I'm not gonna use this for me. This is going to go into a lesson when I introduce this book to kids. These children are going to be holding this pen, and there is a physical connection then that they have to the character in your book, because they don't need to experience what George Moses Horton went through. You know, times have changed, but we can connect that way with the act of writing poetry and then hearing his story and making connections in our own life to his struggles or to his positivity, to his influence on the world. I'm just so impressed to have that physical thing, maybe even more so because it just didn't cross my mind that, you know, what would be a great way to book talk this book, to connect these kids with this book, would be just to put one of those pens in their hands. I just love that. I mean, I can't tell you how much that, because it influenced me in such a way that this was already a book I've been talking about. I love it. It's great. But then you went and did something where I thought, oh, here's a new way I can connect with children.
Right.
I just thought that it was just great. And probably will be something you end up doing when the book comes out that you'll be doing on your author visits, that to make a kid have a connection that this is a newspaper, this is a pen, this is ink to have to dip in and imagine the labor of writing and of getting your words correct, right? It's a thing that it's great that technology is what it is and it's disposable and it is what it is, but
I thought it was brilliant. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what I'm going to do when I start doing the school visits in the fall. Is I'm going to order a bunch of goose quill pens and little packets of ink. And when I go into the schools, then I can, you know, like you say, the kids can actually, I mean, they can read about how George Moses Horton wrote with ink, and then they can experiment with hand lettering, you know, themselves. So,
yeah, I love that writing tool. The way that even it makes me think that writing tool can make them want to write further. Because it's engaging them in a different way of writing.
Definitely.
Well, you're going to have a ton of fun going out pushing this book. And I got to say, again, congratulations for authoring and illustrating this book. You've been on both sides of the fence before. I hope it was a good experience working with yourself.
it was a great experience, and I'm looking forward to promoting it. Actually, in 2 weeks, I'm going to... North Carolina to Chapel Hill, where we're going to launch the book right there in the community. We are going to launch the book right there at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where George once worked and where some of his poems are on display there. So it's going to be very cool.
Have you been there already to see his work in the process of writing this? Or I'm sure you've seen digital copies because they are online, but...
Unfortunately, I didn't, and I really wish that I would have now. I wish that I would have held one of his poems in my hand before I wrote it. But no, this will be my first time going there, and but it's, you know, it's very the appropriate place to launch the book.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it even just from the excitement of being able to be there. I hope people that are able to join you get to know that experience, that this is the first time you've gotten to be so close to his work too, and how sort of reverent that place becomes then, being able to learn about this man and admire him enough to want to tell his story to other children.
And one of the coolest things is I've been told that some of George Moses Horton's relatives are there and are going to come to the launch.
That's amazing. Does that make you nervous at all? I'm not trying to get in your head. I'm so sorry, Don. I'm not trying. but you wrote something that is about a real person. So there are real people connected to George Moses Horton, and you already said you read reviews. So it must play in your mind that family members are going to read this.
I'm not nervous, but I can tell you a little story that was really kind of a touching story. So with the book, It Just Happened, was picked up by Riff. And so Riff had the books in school libraries. And so a kid, fourth grade kid, picked up It Just Happened, and he picked it up because the artwork, for some reason, looked familiar to him. There was something familiar about the artwork, so he took it home and he showed his mom, and he was asking his mother, what is it about this artwork? And he looks up, and in the foyer of his grandmother's living room, I believe, is a photograph of Bill Traylor. It turns out that Bill Traylor is like his great-great-great-grandfather. So it's like, wow. And I still, to this day, I can't wait till I can actually go and meet that kid and put a signed copy of the book in his hands.
Oh, man. You, okay. My job is pretty good. You have the greatest job ever. That beautiful
and I
thing.
I can't wait to put a copy of a poet into George Moses Horton's family's hands as well.
Yes, yes. That beautiful way that children can give back. I mean, it does happen in teaching too. I don't want to take that away. The way that your books inevitably will connect and do connect with thousands of children, but you don't always get to hear it because it takes a certain effort and feeling moved to, sit down and write a thank you or share a story like that or be brave and come tell the author when they're signing that, hey, you're actually a really big deal to me. But when you get those moments, it's so great to hear you share them like that. But I guess I just wish you many more moments like that in the future, Don. That's one of the things that I think about a lot too, that because when an author comes and visits our school, it's amazing to see the way that you and others transform and captivate our audience. But what's equally brilliant is that an hour after you leave, the day after you leave, a week after you leave, when children are still talking about you and still asking questions, that to me is it gives me goosebumps now thinking about it, but it's such a beautiful thing to know. Well, to use kind of a superhero analogy, to know that you've got this great power and you're using it for good, that you're bringing children back again and again to reading and to wanting to learn more about their world and about these people, all the choices that you've made in the books that you're creating and with Poet is no small example too. Is continuing to make children question their world and question themselves and their place, their role in the world and how they can influence their world. So I just want to thank you for the way that you are connecting with our readers and the way I know that you will continue to connect with our readers. Thank you for that, Don.
Oh, well, I love doing it. I love going to schools and visiting schools. And I'm most gratified when I get a letter or an email weeks later from a kid who said, I like to draw, and now I'm going to grow up and become a children's book illustrator like you because I was inspired. And that always makes me feel so great.
Yes. Well, let's stay on the topic of inspiration as I wrap up our time together here. And we'll take things out to the kickball field. And Don, I am coming back out to TLA this year. And I am doing a kickball themed panel. And if you are around I think this year it's in Houston.
Houston, that's right.
If you're in and around that area, I would love to have you out on the field with me. I'm just saying.
I will be at TLA, most definitely.
All right. Well, even if you just come to hang out and just share a cool, hopefully cool, Texas evening with me.
I would look forward to that. I need to make up for the last time. The last time we had a dinner together, I was a little bit nervous. So I didn't chat a whole lot. So I'm going to make up for lost time here. I look forward to that.
I made up for that, for being nervous last time. I think all of us did just by eating as much as we possibly could. but I digress. Here's the question I've been meaning to ask you. I'm assembling an all-star Dream Team Kidlit Kickball Tournament. And Don, I would love to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
So I was thinking about it a bit, and I'm cheating a little bit, but the name that comes to mind is Ernie Barnes, who was not a Kid-Lit person. Mm-hmm. However, he influenced me and many other Kid-Lit, African-American Kid-Lit authors, or excuse me, Kid-Lit illustrators. Okay. Do you remember the TV show Good Times?
Yes.
Okay, so do you remember that this theme music would come on, and they would play that, they would play the music, and they would show that painting of the Sugar Shack.
Okay.
Okay, and I wanted to be just like JJ and paint that Sugar Shack, but JJ was not the one who created that painting. It was Ernie Barnes.
Ernie Barnes. I'm Googling it right now. Ernie Barnes Sugar Shack. Look at that.
He was a professional football player who gave up his career and became an artist. And then when that picture would play behind, you know, the music, that influenced me as an illustrator. And I read someplace where that influenced Kadir Nelson as well. Wow. And all one has to do is look at illustrator Frank Morrison's artwork. And you can see the elongated limbs and the elongated and the colors. Was influenced him as well. So he influenced many young African-American artists. So
wow, Ernie Barnes. As soon as I Googled it, I immediately recognized, yes. Yeah. Oh, I love knowing that illustration, knowing that influence. That's great. Love it. Don, thank you. This has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on again. I wish you a great year of school visits and connecting with children and connecting with teachers and librarians and more importantly, children connecting with George Moses Horton and his story. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having me on, and I look forward to seeing you in Houston next year.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.